The last, associating with devotees and living in the holy dham. What does it mean to live in the holy dham?
Always be where devotees are always chanting the Lord's holy name.
Can you prove that? If you were to prove it, how would you prove it? That's what it means. Huh? Okay. Do you have anything? If you didn't have one, like readily on the tip of your brain, how would you find it? Okay. Somebody give him Bhagavad Gita. You go to the index. Give him a shloka book while you're at it, too. There is a verse that'll prove your point. You just have to find it. And this is in spiritual circles, when you make a statement, when you give an assertion, you have to back it up with proof. Proof means shastra praman. And that means that you have to show where it is, the verse. You have to bring the verse out. And that sound evidence coming from the shastra gives all power to your speech. And when Prabhupada was speaking, often in groups to groups of people, sometimes he would ask his disciples to find out certain verses. He would say, find out that verse. Where is that verse? He knew where the verse was. He knew what the verse was. But he would say, find out that verse, and he would have somebody else look it up and give the verse out loud as evidence, because Krishna's speaking, we're representing Krishna. And when we speak in spiritual circles, we have to have the proof. Shruti smriti paranadi pancha chinki vidambina aikantiki harer bhaktir upatyaiva kalpate. Rupa Goswami says, if you perform devotional service and it's not authorized or proved by shastra, then it becomes a disturbance to the spiritual society, to the society of devotees. So everything we do and say should be backed up by shastra. Then we're living a life called shastra chakshu. Shastra chakshu means that we're living, we're seeing through the eyes of shastra, and therefore our activities are in line with Krishna. How about looking in the shloka book? How about Naham Tishtami Vaikunte? You look under the last in the shloka index, see if that's in there. Yoginam Hrideyeshu Va. Now, Lord Krishna, speaking of the Dham, he told Narada Muni that I'm not in Vaikuntha. He said also, I'm not in the hearts of the yogis. Naham tishtami Vaikunte. Yoginam hridayeshu va. So where is he? So? Where his devotees are doing what? Specifically glorifying him how? Yes, by chanting his glories. So he's present wherever his devotees are chanting his glories. He makes that statement to Narada, famous statement. You have another one? Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Hare Nam, Eva Kevalam, Kalau Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. In this age of Kali Yuga, there's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way than chanting the holy names of the Lord in order to attain perfection. So, living in the holy dham, the dham means where Krishna is present. Krishna is present especially where his devotees are, where his bhaktas are. Yudhisthira Maharaj, yes?
And there's also been said, I believe, in Prabhupada's commentaries, that in the modern age and society, where people may not be able to live in the dham actually, by coming to the temple where the devotees are congregating and chanting his holy name, it serves that purpose.
That means that the temple and the dham are non-different, right?
Yes.
Because Krishna is here, right? and the devotees are chanting his glories. So there's no difference between this place, this little industrial, what used to be a little industrial building, and the Holy Dham, because every molecule here is used in the service of Krishna. If you use material things, as Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita, bhumir apo anulo vayu kam hano bhutir evacha ahankara itiya me bina prakritir ashtada. He says, these are my eight separated material energies. Bina means separated. So what are they? Earth, water, there's some water back there, Ruby's drinking, fire, we just had some fire, air, ether, subtle element, mind, you can experience the mind through observation, intelligence, you can also see through observation, through form direction of the supersoul. Something pops into your mind like Jonas Salk. He discovered the polio vaccine?
Polio vaccine.
He said that he couldn't figure it out for a long time. He had worked on it, and then all of a sudden he was sitting in his car waiting for his wife, and the formula came to him in his mind. Super Soul had revealed to him. Okay, so those are the separated material energies, but they're material, right? So how do you make them spiritual, according to Bhagavad Gita? We can transform from material to spiritual. We can change material energy into spiritual energy, and how do you do it? Okay, you got to prove it, though. Okay, there's something. Go ahead. Yukta Vairagya, do you have the verse? That's good. That's part of a verse, and that'll work. Anasaktasya vishayam yatarham upayunjita nirbanda krishna sambhaya yuktam vairagyam uchite. Means that everything can be, as you said, dovetailed in Krishna's service. How about from Bhagavad Gita? In any words, we should say this verse means that there's a kind of vairagya, which means where Prabhupada explains that a sannyasi living in the forest or a householder living in so apparently opulent situation are both renunciates. How is that so? You can look at a renunciate in the forest, keeps a water pot, maybe a danda, maybe a kolpina, a sparse piece of cloth just to dress himself. And then someone else lives in a palace, and he has a huge bedstead, and he has automobiles, and he has airplanes. But you could call both renunciates. Could you prove that? We could approve of that, somebody being a renunciate? Living in a palace? What is your opinion? Okay, yet Koroshiyat Ashnasiyat Johosi Dadasiyat, yet Tapasyasi Kontiya Tat Kurushva Manarpanam. Krishna recommends all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away should be done as an offering to me. But back on Anasaktasya Vishayan, Yatarham Upayunjita, Nirbanda Krishna Sambande, Yuktam Vairagya Muchite. So what does Yukta mean? Like it comes from means? Connection, right? Just like a yoke. When you yoke two bulls together to plow the field, they're put together, yoke. And also it means yoga. Yoga means to link with the divine. So yukta and vairagya means what? Renunciation. How does it mean renunciation? Well, raga means like the passion for this world, right? And vairagya means without that. So there's no attachment. So yukta vairagya means to use everything, to join everything together, but without attachment. That's the message that Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? He says, you know, work for me. Don't give up working. Everyone knows the verse, right? Karmanya vedikaraste ma palishudhikadachana. So if you ask anybody in India, what is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita, they'll say, do your work. No, not just do your work, do your work, but don't be attached to the fruit, and don't be attached to not doing your duty. You have to do your duty, but you're not entitled to the fruit of it. Don't be attached to it. It's not yours. It doesn't belong to you. And if you become attached, then you're also responsible for the reaction for that. So yukta vairagya, who can give an example from Chaitanya Lila of somebody who lived in a palace? In an opulent situation, who is the greatest renunciate at the same time? That's the, huh? Okay, Pundarik Vidyanidhi. We don't have microphones in here, do we? Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So before Pundarik Vidyanidhi came to Navadvip, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began pining for him. He was such an exalted devotee. Lord Chaitanya loves his devotees. And before Pundarik Vidyanidhi came to Navadvip, he began pining for Pundarik. And he would sing, Pundarik, Pundarik. And all the devotees were wondering, why is Lord Chaitanya chanting this name, Pundarik? Maybe it's a name of Krishna. Maybe it's a... And they were all wondering who Pundarik was. Mukunda knew who Pundarik was because he knew him when he was a child. He knew that he was the most exalted of Vaishnavas. So he went to Gadadhar Pandit and he said, after Pundarik had come to town, no one knew, but Mukunda knew he was there. And he said, you want to meet an exalted Uttama Adhikari pure devotee? And Gadadhar Pandit was a very simple devotee, but he was a pure devotee from birth. And he said, yes, I want to meet. So he said, come with me. And he took him to the palace of Pundarik. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi lived in complete opulence. His hair was oiled nicely with scented oil. And he was on a bedstead which was carved and had sheets as white as the foam of milk. And he had opulent surroundings. He had servants fanning him. And he was leaning back on that bedstead. And when Mukunda brought in Gadadhar Pandit, and here he is. In his mind, Gadadhar Pandit thought, this is a pure devotee lying on a bedstead in this opulent surrounding. And Mukunda understood his mind. Therefore, to evoke the devotional sentiment of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, all it took, and Mukunda knew it, was to chant one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Aho bhakiyam stanaka alakutam. This is a famous verse from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam in which Uddhava, in great feelings of separation and love for Krishna, says, aho bhakiyam stanaka alakutam, is saying that who could ever take shelter of one more merciful than Lord Krishna, who accepted Putana, who came to kill him with poison on her breast, as his mother, who would take shelter of anyone else but Krishna. He was singing that verse like that. And as soon as Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard the verse, he went to pieces. This is a symptom of love of God. As the famous verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, Evam vratasva priyanama kirtya jatan rago chita chuta ucher hasatyato rotiti roti gayati unmadavan nrititi lokabhayaha. That when one devotee enters this process of devotional service with a firm vow, after some time he becomes attached to Krishna in a very unique, special way. Every living entity has a unique, eternal, special relationship with Krishna, and more he becomes attached to his a particular name of the Lord, and then his heart melts, druta chitta, and then he becomes like a madman, and he'll roll on the ground, he'll cry in public, and show all kinds of emotions which are not appropriate for normal everyday society. He becomes like a mad person. Not everybody shows these symptoms externally. Madhavacharya says that some pure devotees whose hearts have melted, who are experiencing these things, don't also externally show these kind of symptoms. But you can tell externally from their demeanor and from their lifestyle by two things. One is that they're steady in devotional service. They never waver at all. And the other thing is that whatever they speak from their mouth is merciful and is for the benefit of others, uplifting spiritually. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi, upon hearing this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, he went into a devotional fit of ecstasy. He began thrashing his arms and his legs all around the room, rolling on the ground over and over again. And he broke everything in the room, the expensive pottery. The bedstead was thrashed and thrown all over the room. His disciples came, tried to restrain him, but there was no restraining him. He went on like that for 7 hours in mad ecstasy. frothing at the mouth, rolling on the ground, crying, wailing, just from hearing this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Finally, he became like an unconscious person, practically no symptoms of life in his body, and he stayed like that until he came back to his normal consciousness. When Gadadhar Pandit saw this reaction to hearing one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, he thought in his mind, I've made an offense to a pure devotee. I thought in my mind that who is this person? Who does he think he is? And I made an offense. So he told Mukunda, he said, I've made an offense to a pure devotee. There's one way I can rectify that. I'm going to take initiation from him. He said, I haven't taken initiation. I'm going to take initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So Mukunda and Gadadhar went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and told him the intention of Gadadhar Pandit, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, do it immediately. And he took initiation from Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So a renunciate who lives in a palace, a renunciate who lives in the forest, what's the difference? Externally, you see a big difference, right? But internally, you can see by somebody's steadiness, by the words that emanate from the mouth. And there are many symptoms, actually. We have to understand from Shastra what are the symptoms of an advancing devotee. There are 9 symptoms mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught Sanatana Goswami about the preliminary stages of pure love for God. What is the preliminary stage before one reaches what is called pure love for God, which is called Krishna Prema? So before Prema comes, Bhava. So what are the symptoms of Bhava? If you were to know if you were in Bhava, if you were to judge yourself today and say, am I experiencing Bhava? How would you know? It's in Shastra. So there are 9 symptoms. And does anybody know what they are or how to find them? Yes, Aniru, go ahead. Yes. Yes, please.
Mouth falling down, fainting. I think that's one too.
These are called ashtika bhavas, which means bodily symptoms. But what I'm after is what. That's good. That's okay. If what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taught as specific symptoms, there are 9, which he said are the symptoms of bhava, where you can tell that a person is entering into this stage. Yes?
Equipoised in all situations, whether the person that he's encountering is chastising him or he's glorifying him.
That might qualify. Do you have an actual verse? Do you know?
No.
Okay.
Some verses, I think, most likely in the second chapter, where Arjuna is asking Krishna, what are the qualities or attributes of somebody who has transcendental qualities, and he says one of them is to be equipoised. I think it's in the Bhagavad Gita.
So that's a general, generally that will be there everywhere. There are very specific things. Prabhu is going to get the verse for us. So one of the first things that, you have it?
I mean, I don't know the verse.
Okay.
But I think anartha
nivritti. Use the mic.
Anartha nivritti, I mean, these are one of the stages that...
Okay, anartha nivritti is listed in another verse. Adaushara tatasara sangata bhajana kriya tato anartha nivritti syatato nishta ruchi stata. Now this, what you're bringing up, is a progression. There's some verses, actually, I think that I had this idea before, and now I'll bring it up. I think that we should compile a little book of some of the progressive verses. Like, this is one. Who will volunteer to help out with that? Thank you. Okay, so I'll pass them off to you, and we'll make a book of these progressive verses. But here's one of them, which Vipul Prabhu kindly brought up. Adau shraddha tata sadhu sangata bhajana kriya tato narta nivritti syat tato nishta ruchistata. And this is a description of the progressive stages of shraddha, Shraddha means faith. And of course, our advancement in devotional service is based on the progression of our faith. Yadrishi, yadrishi, shraddha, siddhir, bhavati, tadrishi. Sri Brahma Samhita says, as our faith increases, we come closer and closer to perfection. So this is one verse, adau shraddha tatasara sangat. So it means, in the beginning, adau means the beginning. Adau shraddha. Da means where you place something, and shraddha means the heart. So where you're placing your heart, actually, is meaning of shraddha. Everyone's placing it somewhere. Krishna describes this in the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, how a person is made of his faith. You're actually made of faith. If you have faith in the Marlboro man, many people have faith in the Marlboro man. Do you know who that is? He rides on a horse and he wears a hat and he gets lung cancer later in his life. But some people have great faith in the Marlboro man and they smoke Marlboro cigarettes. They have faith that if they smoke a Marlboro cigarette that they'll be manly, a manly man, by smoking a Marlboro cigarette. And other people have faith in many other types of things. These are mentioned in the 17th chapter. Some people have faith in jazz, that I like jazz, because they're affected by a certain mode of material nature. Adau shraddha. So shraddha means faith, and faith is born by what? Where does faith come from, shraddha? Does it just appear out of nowhere, or is it delivered to us by a certain means? Sadhusanga, by association. Our advancement in devotional service comes and is born from sadhusanga, means association with sadhus. Bhavadbida bhagavatas tirtha bhuta swayam vibho tirtha kurtvanti tirthani swantak stena gata brita. Means Yudhishthira Maharaj said to Vidura that saints of your caliber, speaking to Vidura, are verily holy places personified. We are talking about tirthas, right? Word tirtha actually means a bridge. It means a bridge between the material world and the spiritual world. You can cross over easily from the material world to the spiritual world. The easiest way is by association with the tirtha, and the sadhus are tirthas. Bhavadvida bhagavatas, the great bhagavatas, those who are living in the Bhagavatam, their lives are personified Bhagavatam, they are tirthas. By their association, very quickly, one gets perfection in devotional life. Or, if one has no idea that they're associating with a sadhu, but somehow or other they come in contact, and somehow or other they do some seva, they get what is called Sukriti, but a certain kind of Sukriti. Agata Sukriti means unknown Sukriti. Means they don't even know they're getting it, but they're accumulating it. There's an accumulation of this, what is called Bhakti Unmukhi Sukriti. It's a certain kind of Sukriti, because you can get other kinds of Sukriti, right? It means you can get Sukriti for getting material things. Is that a blessing or a curse? You sure? Okay. You can get a Sukriti for wanting to merge into the impersonal Brahman. Is that a blessing or a curse, according to Vaishnava philosophy? So the Vaishnavas, they say the highest kind of Sukriti is this Bhakti-Mukhi Sukriti. It means some desire for devotional service. And where does it come from? It comes from association with sadhus. Mahatsevam dwaram ahurav muktes tamo dwaram yoshitam sanghi sangam. Rishabhadeva says that if you associate with Mahatmas and you do some service, your door to liberation is wide open. If you associate with materialistic persons, your door to blank is wide open. Where? How do you say go to hell in Sanskrit? Narake gacha, go to hell. Gacha means go, and narake means... Narake gacha. So you go to hell by association with materialistic people. But if you get association with sadhus, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoi, just by a moment's association means even a fraction of a second of association with a sadhu, that you can attain perfection. You get what's called a gyata sukriti, means you might wake up one day and say, oh, I like the devotees. You might see them and say, oh, those people are good. Where does that come from? Some people see it, some people don't. It comes from Agyata Sukriti. When Maitreya was walking on the bank of the Ganga, he happened to meet with Lord Krishna, who was speaking at that time to Uddhava. And that kind of chance meeting of the personally meeting the Lord, it doesn't happen automatically. It happens by extreme good fortune. And extreme good fortune happens because of our association with sadhus. If we get sadhu sangha, we get everything. Because Krishna is there in the heart of the sadhus. Sarvo hridayam mayam sarunam hridayam tvaham. Mananyat te na jananti manag evyo managapi. Krishna says, I'm in the hearts of my devotees, and the devotees are in my heart. And so this is where you find devotional service. This is the root of it all, is sadhu sangha. So by that kind of association, even if you don't know it, if you get it, then ado shraddha, then shraddha is born. It awakens suddenly in your life. You don't even know why, but you have a sentiment for the devotees, for devotional service. Then you enter into sadhu sangha. It means if you have this kind of faith, oh no, Satyadev Prabhu is leaving. Hare Krishna. Did you find the verse? Okay. So ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha means that if you get this kind of faith, then your desire will be to associate with devotees and have more sadhu sangha. And what do you get when you associate with devotees? What do they tell you to do? Like, what did Maharaj tell his two new disciples today that they should do? He told them that they had to do certain things and not do other things, right? What did he tell them to do? What did he tell you to do?
To wake up early in the morning.
Yes.
At least 9-6 minutes before sunrise.
Yes.
Do the morning program.
And?
Chant 16 rounds.
And anything else? And what about, he said, don't do for the rest of your life. Don't ever do it. Don't break the four principles, which is?
No meditating, no intoxication, no gambling, no resistance.
Right, so what's this called? Called bhajana kriya. It means that if you enter into sadhu sangha, the sadhus will give you this idea of what to do, what not to do, these rules and regulations, and you begin a regulated life of devotional service. This is called bhajana kriya. And as Maharaj mentioned in the class, once you start to follow this bhajana kriya, chanting 16 rounds, you're associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in an authorized way, in a way that's pleasing to the Lord, then you begin on your path. Bhajana kriya tato narta. Anarta means the unwanted things that keep us bound down to this material world and to the bodily conception of life, anartas. And you enter into this process called anarta nivritti, which means the negation of unwanted things that are within the heart, things that hold us back from advancing in devotional service. And this happens through our association with sadhus, taking up bhajana kriya, and then gradually by our application of the process. In other words, the acharya can give you an idea of what to do, but then whose business is it to do it? Right? You have to do it. You have to apply it yourself. It's up to you. Ultimately, Prabhupada said, you're flying your own airplane. When you go to flying school, they'll get all kinds of lessons. But eventually you have to take a solo flight. And then if you didn't listen in class and you cheated on your exam, you might be in sad shape once you get up there. So you have to apply it yourself. And by applying these principles, anarta nivritti means that the unwanted things within the heart, they begin to dissipate by Krishna's mercy because of association with Krishna. Personally, we can't dispose of these things, but because we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna can dispose of them because he is the well-wisher of the living entity. What's that called in Shastra? The best friend, Suhrit. So there are many kinds of friends you can have in this world. Some are called fair-weathered friends. And others are friends. I mean, a lot of people are fair-weathered friends. They're economic friends. They're friends with you as long as you're buying something. Like if you walk into a store in a retail shop, they'll be really friendly, right? You could try on everything, and then you'll say, no, thanks, I'm not interested. Yeah, get out of here. They're friends for a few minutes. But Krishna, He's a Suhrit, means he's the friend always, eternally. He follows the soul from body to body to body to body, always interested in when's he going to turn his attention toward me. And as soon as the soul turns attention towards Krishna, then immediately Krishna gives all intelligence how he can come to him. Who can prove that? Bravo. Where is it in Bhagavad Gita? Okay, give him the Bhagavad Gita. He has to find it. Okay, give it to him. Give him Adiruddha the Bhagavad Gita. So that's the that's a verse which proves this. And it is in Bhagavad Gita. It's a famous verse. So Krishna says this himself, that he will give the intelligence. Anyone tries to approach him, he'll give all facility. Anartha Nivritti means that we're associating with Krishna by chanting his names, by associating with the devotees, by worshipping the deity, and so on. And by those processes, Krishna himself personally purifies our heart. And from that, we come to the next stage, which is called Nishtha. Nishtha means a steadiness in devotional service. Before coming to Nishtha, although we're... Pardon me? Anartha Nivritti, I was just talking about how there's the desires are diminishing, but there's two stages of Anartha Nivritti. One is called Anishta, and the other is called Nishta. So Anishta means unsteady. So before you get steady, just like if you stand up on a ball and you try to balance yourself, it goes like this until you finally find your equilibrium, you find some balance. Whatever you start, in the beginning, you're shaky. In the beginning, we need some more asanas for the devotees, if you can pass them up. Thank you. In the beginning, there's anishta, which means unsteady devotional service. And there are symptoms of this, given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the Madhurya Kadambani. And just I'm coming to this point in a very roundabout way, as usual, the symptoms of bhava, there are also symptoms of unsteady devotional service. Some of those symptoms he mentions as not being able to keep vows. For instance, I'll say, from now on, I'm going to chant 4 rounds a day. And for 3 days, I chant 4 rounds a day. And then the next day, you know, my favorite television show is on, and I'll do it later. And then the next thing... Next thing I realize, I'm asleep, and I wake up 1 in the morning and go, oh, I didn't chant my 4 rounds today. It's an unsteadiness. This is a symptom of anishta bhajana kriya, that I can't keep a steady vow. Another symptom of anishta bhajana kriya is thinking instantly, because I've heard the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, that I'm a pure devotee and that I know everything. This is usually true in any kind of beginning stage. You know, if you start studying English and somebody teaches you a little something, or studying Sanskrit, you know, you learn a few things in Sanskrit, then you start thinking, oh, I'm a Sanskrit scholar. Prabhupada used to say, little Sanskrit learning, very dangerous. Devotees start thinking, oh, I know so many things now, and you become overly intelligent. So you can become overly intelligent into thinking, oh, I'm very smart, I know all these things. I was sitting next to a man last night, we were discussing, I went to this... dinner last night, somebody was asking me about, you know, what are devotees, who are you, what are you people? And this point came up that the more advanced you become in knowledge, there's a phrase, the more you know you don't know. Have you ever heard that before? The more you know you don't know. Is that those who are advanced in devotional service, they have a feeling that they don't know anything. That they're beginners. The more they become advanced in devotional service, they think that I'm unqualified, and who am I? And Trinadapi Suniche Na. They feel more humble because they're actually experiencing something. Just like piano, you learn a few things, you think you know everything, but when you actually hear a great pianist and you start to learn how intricate it is to become a great pianist, then you'll feel like, oh, I have such a long way to go. But a neophyte in Anishta Bhajana Kriya thinks, oh, this is easy. I know everything. I'm advanced in devotional service. But he's not advanced yet. It takes a lifetime of practice and failure to come to the point of actual finding steadiness in devotional service. So there are many symptoms listed as being anishta bhajana kriya. And through anishta, unsteadiness, one comes to nishta. Nishta means a stage at which although there are still material desires haunting me, they have been diminished so much that it's like they're in the background. They're not blasting me anymore. They don't knock me off my perch in devotional service. Although I notice that they're there, I have the strength to bring my mind always back to Krishna, no matter where it goes. The strength and the power, they don't wash me away and dissuade me from the process of devotional service. And from there, there are further advanced stages in devotional service. And those are in this verse, Adau Shraddha Tata Sadhu Sangata Bhajana Kriya. We're talking now about verses. There are many, many verses in the Shastra which give a long progression. You could give a whole discourse just about the one verse, and this is one of them, Adau Shraddha. And we're going to make a little book like this with all these shlokas in them that have a progression of ideas that we can use, and then we'll all learn those shlokas. Now, from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, may I have the Adi Lila 22nd chapter? The point I was coming to was there are symptoms of bhava, and these symptoms are listed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Madhya Lila. In his teachings to Lord Chaitanya, thank you. One of them you may be able to relate to, this is a very practical thing, is called anartha kalatvam. And it means that a person who is advancing devotional service has a strong disposition of not wanting to waste even a second. This is you can test yourself and see if you're developing this feeling. Prabhupada used to point out that a life of devotional service, and Rupa Goswami does too, of course, point out that it means a full contribution, 24 hours a day in devotional service. Tanama rupa charitaru sukirtananu smrityo kramena rasana manasi niyoja tishtan raje tananuragi jananugami kalam nayet akilamityu padesha saram. The devotee of the Lord is engaged 24 hours a day in some activity in devotional service. Doesn't mean like Haridas Thakur. What was he engaged in 24 hours a day? Yeah, he could chant 24 hours a day. And even a prostitute came to him in the middle of the night and said, you know, would you like to enjoy? And he said, sure, later, when I finish my rounds. But he never came to the end of his rounds. That was the big trick. And she sat there listening for 3 days and finally said, you know, I'd like to be initiated. Would that be all right? Because his chanting was so pure that he purified even the prostitute. So 24 hours a day he was engaged in chanting. How about Maharaj Ambarish? How was he engaged 24 hours a day? He was a king. So you have 9 types of devotional service, 24 hours a day, in a mixture. Because he was a king, he had many different activities to do. So one of the things, he was washing the temple. Another thing, he was associating with devotees. Another thing, he was bowing down before the Lord. The 6 Goswamis, we spoke about this the other day, Sankhya, Purvakana, Magana, Natibi, Kalavasani, Krito, that they were engaged in scheduled measurement every day in certain kinds of activities, 24 hours a day, engaged in devotional service. Watch Prabhupada's life. You'll see from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next. His life was scheduled so that from one engagement to the next engagement, the next, this is nectar, a life of nectar. When you have your life set up like this, so you move from one spiritual activity to the next, to the next, to the next. And if someone interrupts your schedule, not that you're a fanatic or something, but if there's something that takes you away even for a few seconds from your schedule, you get an anxiety. This is called anartha kalatvam. Means you don't want to waste even a second outside engagement in devotional service. This is one of the symptoms of devotional service. Another symptom of bhava, the preliminary stage before love of Godhead. So you can test yourself how much you feel in this flow that you don't want to waste even a second outside of devotional service. Another symptom is that one is forgiving. The example is given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Parikshit Maharaj, he was cursed. Who cursed him? Who was Sringi? It was a Brahmana boy, but how would you describe him? I mean, what's his description in the Bhagavatam? Was he an upright very qualified, highly intelligent Brahmin boy? Or what would you, in one word, what would you call him? That's two words. And in the English vernacular, what would you call him? I'd call him a punk. No, I mean, no offense. But, you know, he was kind of a punk. He was down there playing with his friends, and he was showing off to his friends that, you know, that he could curse a king. And, watch this. You know, and he had some tejas, because the age was still in such a way that he could put some power out from his cursing, and it was taken like that by Parikshit Maharaj. When he heard the curse from this little boy, he said, I deserve it. This is called forgiveness. There's this feeling that shantir avyarta kalatvam. It's the first word. Shantir avyarta kalatvam. So shantir means that you're forgiving. And Parikshit Maharaj, when he was cursed by the Brahmin boy, immediately he felt that there's no other way that I would take fully to devotional service. Of course, he was a pure devotee from before he was born. In the womb, he saw Krishna. And for the rest of his life, he was called Parikshit. Why? What's the name Parikshit mean? Translation means? The examiner. Why? What was he examining? Everything. Because he saw Krishna once, right? And now he wanted to see him again. His whole life, he was only looking for Krishna everywhere at all times. So, here, you can look it in here. Shantir avyarta kalatvam. And so, this is a symptom of bhava, that because one is so absorbed in Krishna, that when so-called reversals, and I mean, could you get a more severe reversal than this? You get a phone call? It's like somebody cursed you, you're going to die in 7 days. How are you going to feel about that? Or, you know, I mean, nowadays, you know, just get a phone call and guess what? All your money's gone. How do you feel about that? Okay? Well, if you feel okay about it, then maybe you're developing symptoms of bhava, because this is one of the symptoms. Shantir avyarta kalatvam. Avyarta kala. Shantir avyarta kalatvam. Then mana shunyata. Mana shunyata. Man means this false ego. Like nirmana moha jita sanga josha. Krishna says in the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that one has to become free from false ego. False ego means this tendency to identify with the body and to think oneself the same as this body and react in that way. If it's not there, it's in the 20th chapter. You can look in the other volume. Shantir avyarta kalatvam. That free from false ego. Again, the example is given of Parikshit Maharaj, that when all the great sages and saints came and they were all offering him advice, he said to them simply, let the snake bird or whatever magical thing that the Brahmin boy has conjured bite me at once. I don't care, just as long as you keep on chanting the glories of Lord Krishna. And then, of course, soon after, Shukadeva Goswami appeared. The next symptom is virakti. And we already talked about this, the same as vairagya, which means detachment from the world, because the world is a temporary place. It's not our home. In the Bible, Lord Jesus told his followers, don't set up your home here, set it up in the spiritual world. This place you're building on sand, and it will be destroyed. You won't be able to keep it here. Krishna tells Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shruti Pratyakshamat Aityam Anamanam Chatushtayam Pramane Svanavastanad Vikalpatsa Virajite, that you should understand in every direction, you should understand how this world is unsteady and not a permanent place. He says, by Shruti, hear from the Bhagavatam. If you hear regularly from the Bhagavatam, just like in the beginning of the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, you'll hear everything you need to know to become detached from the opposite sex. Because this is the great binding force of the material world. Whether you are a bug or a dog or a cow or a human being, the great binding force that keeps us in the material world, which is called the shackles that keeps us here, is the attraction between male and female. Pumsa striya maitu nibhavamitam. It's pumsa and striya, no matter where you look, even in plant life. And the two are combined, because it comes from the spiritual world. It's janmad yasa yataha. Because Radha and Krishna have that attraction, When it's manifest in the material world, of course, in perverted reflection, then it that same attraction is there, but that's the great binding force of this material world. But if one is advancing in devotional service, virakti means that detachment arises within the heart, and the example of a virakti given in by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami is Bharata Maharaj. Bharata Maharaj was a young king, and he was very opulent. In fact, the whole world was named after him. You can't do much better than that. We used to tell people on Sankirtan that if they gave a big donation, we'd name a street after them. When they were just about to give a donation, if you give $100, we'll name a street after you here in San Francisco. They go, oh, okay. I don't think we actually did it, but we meant to. the whole planet was named after Bharata. But because of his love for God, because of his virakti, because of this bhava that he had within his heart, he gave it up. He walked away from everything. His home, his kingdom, his beautiful wife, all his wealth, everything. He was only attracted to go and sit down and enter into devotional service fully. So this is called virakti. Huh? Shantir avyarta kalatvam. Virakti mana shunyata, ashabanda samukanta, namagana sadarichi. Well, maybe I'll remember the whole thing. Virakti mana shunyata means free from this this kind of false ego. Then ashabanda. Ashabanda means hope, great hope within the heart. That means the devotee is always hankering for the association of Krishna and always hoping for his mercy. Epitomized by the great verse by Lord Brahma in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Tatenu Kampam Susamikshamano. So this verse, it's like a lament almost that the devotee has, feeling separation from Krishna, feeling that, always hoping that the Lord will bestow special mercy, special mercy. This hope should be there within our hearts. Tate anukampam susamikshamano, that we should always be hankering that the Lord will bestow his special full mercy upon me. So a devotee in bhava has this feeling in the heart, always hoping, hankering that the Lord will give special mercy, that I'll be able to advance in devotional service. I will have the association of the devotees. Ashavanda samukanta namagani sadaruchi. So that means that a devotee in bhava has a perpetual attachment to the name of Krishna. Namagani, sadaruchi, always has ruchi for the name. In fact, this attachment is described in two stages by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. He says that when one develops an ordinary attachment for chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, he or she likes to hear the holy name in a certain way. Maybe they're attached to it, certain kinds of bhajans and not others. Certain people singing and other people not singing. Oh, I only like Indra singing in Vrindavan, or I only like Lokanath over in Berkeley. These kinds of things. But somebody who hasn't attained this higher stage, they don't care where it comes from. Of course, they care that it comes from pure devotees, but they don't care what it sounds like. They're inextricably attached and attracted to hearing the holy name of the Lord, whatever form it comes out in. They'll run to that place because the name becomes so attractive to them. And this is one of the symptoms of bhava, namagana sadaruchi. You better help me out here. Where's the... It's not in the... it's in Sanatana... It's not in the Antya Lila. It's in the Madhya Lila. Shantir is spelled with a K, right? Shantir. Oh, yeah. Shanti. That was the problem. We have to call tech support and talk to... Okay, so Shantir is K-S-I. K-S. K-S. That'll solve the problem. I think we'll... Okay. Oh, Dharmesh. You know the shloka?
I wanted to say the same thing, that, you know, spell it with a K-S-A-N-T-I-R.
Yeah, sorry about that. My shortcoming. Yeah, we should have said it in Bengali. Kantir abhyaktam. Thank you, Ruby Mataji. From now on, we'll speak in Bengali only. All right, now we're getting somewhere. This is from The Life's Ultimate Goal, Madhya Lila 23. Shantir avyarta kalatam viraktir mana shunyata asha bhanda samukanta namagani saraji asakti stad gunakyane. So asakti means attachment to the qualities of Krishna. And priti stad vasati stale means attachment to living in the holy dham. Getting a taste for living in the holy dham means every other place besides the holy dham. We already talked about this earlier. What is the holy dham, where Krishna's devotees are chanting its glories? Of course, there is the holy dham of Mathura Vrindavan, and there is the holy dham of Mayapur, Navadip dham. In these places, when you enter into these dhams, you get something there that you can't get anywhere else. It's a very special thing. Just by being there and not committing offenses while you're there, your life becomes changed. The air is different. It's spiritual. The water is different. The sound vibration, everything is different in the dham. And you can actually feel it. When you're driving in and out of the dham, you can feel when you're entering into Braj Mandala. There's a kind of ecstasy that you can feel going in, and a sort of, a lot of devotees get this whiplash when they leave the dham. I always warn devotees when they come to the dham, be careful. Because when you leave, you can become morose. You stay in the dham for a month, say, and start to get a taste. A little taste. I mean, there's little things that you get at first just by being in the dham, just the way the devotees are enthusiastic. Like if you stay out at Govardhan, you'll see how enthusiastic the people are to go around Govardhan Hill. At nighttime sometimes, 1 a.m, you can hear them out there chanting in huge groups going around the hill. And that vibration, it goes into your ear, into your heart, and you become enthused by that and you become attached to it. And the way the wind blows in the dham, everything about the dham is transcendental. And just by staying there, you get a certain kind of attachment to the dham, and then your mind will start to go there to the dham. And this is one of the symptoms of bhava, to become attached to the dham. The dham also, just like in Los Angeles, every year we have this gigantic Rath Yatra. It's been going on for about 27, 28 years, I think. And it's held at Venice Beach, which is in contention for the most degraded place on the planet. It might be right up there in the top three. During the regular course of activity, there are gang fights there. People get killed all the time. You can see regular gang activity, people walking back and forth. It's a very degraded. I mean, human beings who have degraded to the level of dogs, actually. That's what gang members are. They mark their territory and they think they're dogs. Actually, they've become dogs. They become dogs in their next life. And the Rath Yatra comes. Lord Jagannath stays there. And for one whole day or two whole days, there's a production there with chanting and dancing. And Lord Jagannath presides over the ceremony. Now, if you go there and you can stay within that little bubble of where the festival's going on, I've had this experience. Go down to Los Angeles and help prepare for the festival. You can stay absorbed pretty much 24 hours a day because there's unlimited service to do getting ready for these festivals. So I'll go in the kitchen and cook. And then cooking 2-3 days, then going down, distribute books, stay at the festival site. You're there all day, see the devotees, see Lord Jagannath. Then you have to leave. Now, when you leave, you have to cross over Venice Boulevard. You have to cross over this little strip where all the gang activity is and everything. I had this experience several times leaving there, and it's like there's a demarcation between the material and spiritual world called the Viraja Zone, the Viraja River. When you know you're leaving the spiritual world, coming into the material world, the vibration, everything changes. And it's so stark when you're there with the devotees and you're absorbed in service, and then you leave and you go out and you see people entering 7-Eleven with malintent and going about their business in different ways. The vibration becomes material. And you can feel how you were in the dham because the Lord was there and the devotees were there. The vibration is palpable. You can feel it in your heart. You can feel it in your mind and soul. So living in the Dham, becoming attached to where the devotees live and chant, and becoming regularly attached to either going to Vrindavan Dham or Mayapur Dham, or if it's not possible, and someday it may not be possible. We live in America or something. Who knows what might happen in the world? We may not have to go there. It's not, you don't actually have to go there physically, but you can dwell there in your mind by hearing about it and living in the Dham. But this is one of the symptoms of bhava. Pritistad vasatistale means to have this priti or this love for the places where the Lord lives and where the devotees sing his glories. Ityado nubhava sur jata bhavan kure jane. Jata means to be born. Bhava means bhava, so it means you'll know bhava is being born in your heart. And I'll read the translation. When the seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna fructifies, the following 9 symptoms manifest in one's behavior. And you can mark this down. This is Madhya Lila 23. This is one of the verses for our for that book we're going to make. Verse number 23. Madhya 23, verse 18 and 19. When the seed of ecstatic emotion for Krishna fructifies, the following 9 symptoms manifest in one's behavior. Forgiveness, concern that time should not be wasted, detachment, absence of false prestige, hope, eagerness, a taste for chanting the holy name of the Lord, attachment to descriptions of the transcendental qualities of the Lord, and affection for those places where the Lord resides. That is, a temple or a holy place like Vrindavan. These are all called anubhav, subordinate signs of ecstatic emotion. They are visible in a person in whose heart the seed of love of God has begun to fructify. So, the progressive path of devotional service begins with association with devotees. And by association devotees, we take to Bhajana Kriya. By the direction of the devotees, we enter into a regulated life following the principles of devotional service, the do's and the don'ts, and especially by association with the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, we'll gradually make advancement to these stages. Can you use the mic?
So these 9 symptoms, do they gradually manifest in the devotee who's practicing simultaneously, or is it, how does it happen?
Well, there are different ways. The Nectar of Devotion mentions that there is something called shadow attachment that one can gain by association with very advanced devotees. And it means that sometimes even a very new person, a neophyte devotee, by association with a very advanced devotee might get a taste for some of these symptoms, actually. However, you still have to work to develop them. The example that we've given many times, and everyone's heard in this class before, is Narada Muni. Narada Muni had association with greatly advanced Bhaktivedantas, who stopped for the 4 months of the rainy season at his home. And he served them, and he also, by their permission, took the remnants of their food. And he developed a strong attachment for hearing and chanting by their association. After they left, and after his mother died, he was a small boy, but he went off wandering into the jungle. And at one point, he got the association of the Lord. The Lord manifested himself. And all of his senses, every sense that we have now, you know, we have 9 holes in our body, and they represent different senses. There, we actually have spiritual senses like that. They're just covered over now by the material body. But each one of those can become individually and spontaneously enlivened to serve the Lord and actually run after the Lord for service. This is an experience that Narada Muni had. And he was swimming in an ocean of ananda, but then the Lord broke his trance and said, you know, you're a bogus yogi. He said, you're a ku yogi. You're attached to the jungle. You're attached to the forest. You're not totally attached to me. You're attached to the mode of goodness still. And still you have some work to do. But he already experienced it. He experienced that higher taste and these symptoms, higher symptoms that he got, which sometimes we call a free sample, that you get when they're passing out candy bars on the street corner of Chicago. And, you know, they have this little thing and they come around and they say, here, have a candy bar. And it's about this big. And I used to see them do that when we do Sankirtan down there. They come out for the free samples and they have these little teeny introductory candy bar and just enough so you could, like, taste it. And, of course, I didn't eat one, but I saw other people eating them. And, you know, they'd eat the candy bar and it's like, give me another one. It's like, nope, that one, that one was free. They used to say that with drug dealing, too. They say the first one's free. Because then they get addicted and they want more, and then, you know, then you got to go buy it for a high price, and it gets higher and higher as you need more. And so it's the same thing in devotional service. Krishna can give us a free sample, and the first one might be free, but then you got to pay for it. And you have to actually prove to Krishna, it's not that we just develop faith in Krishna, but Krishna develops faith in us too, in that we have to show that we're steady. It's a relationship, you know. He sees us behind closed doors, what we do, how we're thinking, you know, what our intentions are and so forth. And ye yata amam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. As devotees worship me, where their hearts are, that's how he rewards us. So if we want full reciprocation with Krishna in love, we should surrender fully. So anyway, these symptoms might come at different times by arrangement of Krishna or by the association of devotees, and we may get some free sample or a preview of what that's like. And they may not come all at once, but gradually develop through the stages as we advance in devotional service. Hare Krishna. Any other last points? Yes, Prabhu.
Rachi and Asakti, which are below bhava.
Yeah, those symptoms are stages actually past bhava. Those are all, if anybody wants to read more carefully about what these stages are and what the exact symptoms are, there's a book called the Madhurya Kadambani, which is written by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of our great acharyas. And he goes through each stage and will describe for you what those stages are, exactly, you know, how you'll feel in those stages, etc., and onward towards prema, up to prema. Yes?
Prabhu, you nicely explained the significance of association. I had a question, like, you know, sometimes I feel, or if there is some service to be done, and if one spends some time on that, he had another option of, you know, associating personally or associating with the books, the scriptures, which, and the other thing is the seva, which is reducing the time of personal association with sadhus and the scriptures. So how can one balance it, or what is the right way?
They're absolute. Means that there's no difference, actually, between all of these things. However, there is a sense, there's vani and vapu. Vani means the instruction given by the spiritual master, by the great sadhus, and vapu means their personal association. If I endeavor for vapu association, personal association, but I haven't heard sufficiently, or I haven't also followed the instructions sufficiently, I may not be able to appreciate the personal association. A devotee, Sureshwar Prabhu, gives a nice description of how he was hankering to be closer to Prabhupada, and somehow he finagled his way into a morning walk. Prabhupada used to, every day, he'd go on a morning walk, and he was at temples. Not everybody could go on the morning walk. So it was, if you got invited to go somehow or other, and you got in the morning walk, it was a big deal. And then you could, you know, see Prabhupada, walk with Prabhupada, hear what he was saying. So he got into a morning walk, and he said there was a lot of jockeying for position in those walks. The devotees would be walking, trying to get closer to Prabhupada, and a lot of elbows flying around, trying to get closer. And he somehow or other got his way in closer and closer to Prabhupada. And sometimes when Prabhupada was walking, he would walk and then he'd stop and talk. In other words, he'd walk briskly and then all of a sudden he'd stop And you know, when there's a group of people walking with you. So anyway, he got close to Prabhupada behind him, and Prabhupada was walking fast, and all of a sudden he stopped to make a point, planted his cane, and he was, you know, saying something. And Shureshvara stopped as short as he could. He didn't touch Prabhupada, but he said, I came about 2 inches from the back of his head. And he said, I had this realization that I pulled up 2 inches before the back of Prabhupada's head, and I was there, and I was going, I can't get any closer than this. But then he realized in that instant also that this doesn't necessarily mean that I'm close to Prabhupada. Shushusho shadadanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahat seveyavi prapunya tirtana shevana. If you follow the instruction and do the seva for such a mahatma, then you're eternally connected. Doesn't matter where you are. Physically, Prabhupada didn't have much physical association with his spiritual master. As he describes himself, oh, I was a grihastha. There were so many sannyasis and brahmacharis who were in there in the inner circle. But Prabhupada was never out of the inner circle because his heart was inextricably connected to Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta through the instruction and following his instruction. And this was Prabhupada's real directive in life and to us also. Vyavasaya atmika buddhir ekeha kunanandana, this famous verse from the Bhagavad Gita, in which if one takes the order of the spiritual master as one's life and soul, you're never separated. You cannot be separated from. My personal experience, when Prabhupada left the planet, my service was always the same. It was book distribution. And I was in New York City distributing books. We didn't go, although there was some invitation to come to Vrindavan when Prabhupada was leaving. Somehow or other, the way things were going, many of us didn't go. We stayed to distribute books, and we were doing a marathon, actually, because we knew the scores that came into Prabhupada. Prabhupada, even in his last days when he was very ill, they'd bring scores into him. He'd sit up, and he'd say, this is bringing me life, to hear the scores of the book distribution going. So that's, we figured, we'll just stay and distribute books. Maybe it'll make Prabhupada feel better. So we were on a marathon, and we heard that Prabhupada had left the planet, and at that time, my partner in book distribution was Pragosh Prabhu, and we used to go out every day to LaGuardia Airport. And that afternoon or evening when we got the news that Prabhupada left, of course, everyone in the temple, it was a large temple, that 340 West 55th, 28th and 9th, it was a nine-story building that we had purchased. It was full of devotees, and there was devotees were crying, devotees were emotional. At the same time, work had to go on, and we made a big feast. We had a kirtan practically all night, and then a feast, as is the program when your spiritual master leaves. Devotees, including Pragosh and I, only had, you know, an hour or two of rest, I remember. And I think I was sleeping in, it was early in the morning, and Pragosh came to me and woke me up and said, today we have to go on Sankirtan, no matter what the circumstances. So we packed up our stuff, we got in the car as usual, and we drove out to the airport. And I remember this experience that going out and stepping onto my usual spot where I distributed every day, and as soon as my feet touched the floor on that LaGuardia Airport, I felt more connected to Prabhupada than I had ever been before. I felt a kind of ecstasy in my heart that because I was doing this service before and I'm doing it now, I can't be separated. And I fully felt Prabhupada's presence at that minute and experienced that, you know, he was there. So through seva, one can never be separated. Sometimes there were a couple of devotees in Europe that were so fired up for book distribution. Sometimes they didn't come to the Mayapur festival. Everybody came to the Mayapur festival once a year. Prabhupada told us to. But somebody told Prabhupada that certain devotees, there were two of them especially, Rohini Sutta and I think, I forget the other one, that didn't come because they were too absorbed in some marathon distributing books. And Prabhupada glorified them and said, well, there's no difference. They're also connected in that way. So it's absolute. And another example is Jayananda, which you've probably heard before, but He was actually my bhakti leader, and he was the spirit of the San Francisco temple when we all joined, because he was always doing service, always staying engaged 24 hours a day. And when Prabhupada came to visit, there were lots of sannyasis and GBC and everything like that in the inner circle. And I remember one time when we all came into his room, and everyone was, you know, jamming up close to Prabhupada to try to be seen first. And just like in Krishna Leela, they're all trying to get closer and see who can touch Krishna first. And like that, that mood is, that feeling was there. And Prabhupada looked around and he said, "Where's Jayananda?" And Jayananda was off, you know, doing some service with overalls on and all greasy somewhere. That's where he always was, practically. In fact, you know, he didn't wear a Brahmin's thread most of the time I knew him, because it was always black. Because he'd be doing so much service, it would just turn black. So he just, you know, "Why aren't you wearing Brahmin's?" It just turns black anyway, you know. So he didn't. But Prabhupada, that was the first thing. He's like, "Where's Jayananda?" He noted him because he knew his service attitude and his service mood. And in that way, you know, don't try to see Krishna, but try to act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. So, but at the same time, when you're doing service like that, Krishna will give you opportunities more and more to have advanced association, which is the very cause of advancing in devotional service. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, when you chant Hare Krishna sincerely and carefully, and you enter into this phase of namapas, which means just the dim reflection of chanting a holy name past namaparad, one of the results of that kind of chanting is that Krishna will provide you with good association. He'll arrange it. How can we arrange it? You know, like Dhruva Maharaj, when he left after becoming very angry at his stepmother, he went off to the forest determined to find Krishna. And all of a sudden, Narada Muni appeared. And it says in that section that Narada Muni had overheard the conversation between Dhruva and his mother. How could he have overheard it? He wasn't there. Because super souls and with everyone's heart, Brahmanda Brahmate Kon Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. And Narada Muni was instructed by Krishna within his heart to go and help this soul. And when he came to Dhruva Maharaj, he said, "Where are you going?" He knew where he was going. He said, "I'm going to the forest to find God." And he tested him. The point is, he had this determination that he wanted to, that he was going to go find God in the forest. And even when Narada told him, "Go home, just be equipoised, you should tolerate these kinds of things," what did he say? He said, "Thanks for the advice, I'm going to the forest." And then Narada gave him the mantra because he saw that he was qualified for it. So the point is this: if you want a spiritual master like Narada Muni, you better have a desire like Dhruva Maharaj. And if you have that in your heart, you'll get everything that you need. All kinds of association will open up to you. And it's not a material arrangement. You know, you can go here and there and try to get association, and that's not a bad idea. But if you take the order and the service, then Krishna will make all arrangements that you'll meet and have everything that you need, including sadhu sangha. Gopremanande Hari Hari Bo, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.